7.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn our attention back to a review of kind of where we have been in the creation account. Over many months, we have worked our way through much of what Yah had to say about his creation, at least up to the creation of man. But this is a good time for us to review some of what he has shared with us and to reflect on the perspective that it gives us of time as his plan unfolds throughout these past six millennia. God predicted things would occur that were important to him during each of the 7 days of creation. All were embedded in the creation account. According to Yahweh's testimony, something very specific, something very important would have to occur during each of these first six 1,000-year eras that was both representative of that time and how he described the unfolding nature of creation and also important to him. And while that's true, it's not entirely true because, God is far more concerned about the 40 Yobel periods than he is about 20 Yobel periods. Now, for those who are just coming up to speed with all of this, Yah explains in the part of his Torah, in Kara, which means called out, corrupted to Leviticus, that he has established a 50-year period, which is seven sevens plus one, that is modeled after the adoption concept of Bukkudim, which is first fruits, that's modeled after the annual celebration of seven Sabbaths, which is seven times seven plus one day from unleavened bread, and that the unique nature of that time would be that all slaves would be freed. So all people would become free, that all debt would be forgiven, and that that all land would return so that it was redistributed so that you couldn't create a stratification, if you will, of society. That everybody was given the opportunity to work. If you worked, great. If you chose not to work, not so good. If you were unable to work, his plan also had a provision that 10% of what people produced was not given to the poor, but was left available to them to harvest and prepare themselves. So that was that's the basics of this, and also I said the 40 Yobel increments are important. We just went through a presentation of the timing that the children of Israel were slaves in Egypt. That period of a time of testing was 400, a multiple of 40. Reigned for 40 days and 40 nights. Yahusha was tested for 40 days and 40 nights. Yahweh, while the children of Israel were at the foot of Mount Horeb, dictated the Torah to Moshe over 40 days. 40 is a extraordinarily important manifestation of time. It's also in the fourth millennia of humankind that God was going to reveal his greater light in association with the Moed or meetings. So 40 Yobel is the things that we should be most concerned about, although there are markers on the 20 Yobel periods. 40 Yobel is 2,000 years, 20 Yobel, 1,000 years. So by way of review, day one focused on Yahweh's spirit and on light, something Adam experienced directly and immediately in the garden. Yet all around him, just outside of Eden's walls, was, as God said, Tohu, Bohu, and Chosek, destructiveness, death, and separation, something Adam would also come to know after his fall. The first day of man's history, where a day is 1,000 years, dawns with God, who is one, initiating a one-on-one, 1,000-year relationship with the first man created in his image. We are to learn that the God named I Am, Yahweh, is the source of our existence. The God who equated himself to light and who called light into being is like light, and that he exists in the eternal now. He invites us to join him there. Two is the number of choice, so it stands to reason that the second millennia of mankind, like the creation account, was all about separation. And if you recall, day two is also all about water. It is separation and water that rings true through all of the testimony on the second creative day. And this is the time of the flood, where the lone family who chose God was separated from those who did not. The deluge occurred at the beginning of this era in 2968 BCE, ending at 1968 BCE, right when Yahweh told us it would. And in future programs, we're going to chronicle the timing of the flood. And it so happens that we now know exactly when the flood occurred, how it occurred, what areas were deluged, and there is scientific evidence now to verify Yah's timing. Three is the number of family, father, mother, and child. So it was that throughout mankind's third 1,000-year era, we humans multiplied prodigiously, as did our civilizations. And it was during the third millennia after the expulsion from the garden and deliverance from the ark that God established his covenant with Abraham, who in turn created the ultimate human family. Abraham's family sowed the seeds of salvation, giving birth to the Messiah. Acting out a dress rehearsal for the Son of God, Abraham, whose name means merciful father, was asked to sacrifice his own son, Yishak, whose name, by the way, means laughter, on Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yahweh, in 1968 BCE, the very year the third millennia of human history began. 1,000 years later, at the close of the third era and the dawn of the fourth, on that very same mountain, in 968 BCE, in precisely that place, Solomon laid the cornerstone for the first temple. Exactly 1,000 years later, in 33 CE, also on Mount Moriah, the Messiah, which means doing the work of Yahweh, was hung on an upright pole on Mount Moriah in that exact same place, just as had been predicted, to redeem all mankind. The similar events in human history form a repetitive perspective, and these occur every 40 Yobel. If you're wondering why you've never heard of Yobel, because the Francis Bacon, who was the publisher of note for the King James, the translator of note, if you want to call him that, changed Yobel to Jubilee. But Yobel means Yahweh's Lamb is God. This 50-year celebration of Yahweh's reconciliation, which is presented in the heart of the Torah, as I mentioned, in Kara, Leviticus 25. Kara means invitations to meet and to be called out. It is based upon the formula of Shavuah. Shavuah is 7 times 7 years plus 1. In Hebrew, 7 means promise. And so it's the promise of 7. During this time, all slaves are freed, all debts are forgiven, symbolic of God's redemption. And spiritually, 40 is the number of completion. As I shared briefly before, after 40 days of testing in the wilderness, Yahweh began his ministry. Immediately thereafter, he connected the dots for us, beginning his first public declaration by announcing the upcoming fulfillment of the second multi-millennial Yobel. He did so by reading a passage from the book of Yeshayahu, which means Yahweh is our Savior, corrupted to Isaiah 61, 1 and 2, which focused on the quickly approaching Yobel year of 33 CE. This is also something most people miss as a result of the horrid English translations, but it is attested in Luke 4, 16 through 21, nonetheless. And as I mentioned, the Kara Leviticus 25 presentation of the Yobel conveys the ideas of freeing individuals, forgiving their debts, and returning things to Yahweh every 50 years. The land, after all, is his home. So that you don't miss the obvious, the last set of 40 50s, the last set of 40 Yobels, will conclude on the Moed Mikre of Sukkah shelters in 2033. The math is fairly straightforward. Yahweh faithful to his prophetic promise after returning 5 days earlier on Yom Kippurim in 2033, which is year 6000 Yah. He will remove all evil from the world, prolonging and protecting both life and choice while returning the entire earth to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. And such will be the case for 1,000 years. From God's perspective and from the viewpoint of salvation, the most monumental event in human history, which is the redemptive advent of the Messiah, concluding as it does with our salvation, this occurred as promised during the fourth millennia, which began in 967 BCE and concluded in 33 CE. In complete and precise adherence to the Moed appointed times, it is why every aspect of the fourth day speaks of salvation. While nothing was created on this day, it remains the longest narrative in the creation account for this very reason. Yahweh manifests himself in the flesh, arriving in human form as Yahusha, on the invitation to be called out and meet with God of Tabernacles in 2 BCE, just as he predicted. Then, 33 years later, he fulfilled his mission when he allowed himself to be affixed to the upright pole on Passover, sacrificing himself to remove our sin. His soul did this, separated from God on unleavened bread, so that he could make a first fruits offering of saved souls, himself leading the way, right on schedule during his fulfillment of Bukurim. The fourth annual Moed Mikra of Shavua, known as the Feast of Weeks, or Seven Sabbaths, was then fulfilled on the appointed day when the set-apart spirit empowered and enriched her children on Shavua. Four of the seven Moed Mikra have been fulfilled on the very day they were designed. Three remain, and I'll bet my soul that Teruah trumpets predicts the pre-tribulation harvest of saved souls, that Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, 40 Yobel removed from his Passover sacrifice, marks Yahusha's return, and that the millennial Shabbat will begin 5 days later on Sukkah Tabernacles, in year 6000 Yah, which we can recalibrate our calendar to reflect 2033. There's only 20 years left, and even fewer, to the beginning of the tribulation. When we return, we'll take a question from Nick, who is calling in from Wisconsin, and then continue with this review of Yah's prophetic testimony, which is embedded in his creation account. I'm your host, Yada. We have Nick on the phone from Wisconsin. Nick's called the program several times before. And Nick, I understand you have a question on forgiveness of debts.
Yes. If I'm a businessman, investor, mm-hmm. what sense of me investing in someone, why would I invest in someone if I know that in 50 years or at the end, that there will be no return?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So what you're doing is you're wondering why, how an economy that was managed as Yahweh described here, where loans all loans had to be forgiven at a specific 50-year interval. So the time is known every 50 years when all loans will be forgiven, all slaves are freed, and all property is redistributed so that you don't have, you know, we're not all equal in terms of our capacity or our desire to work. And so some people obviously prevail. And also there's good fortune and bad fortune that strikes people as well. So we have a tendency to see if you had no means to redistribute land, for example, that you'd end up with an empowered class and then slaves like what we had in medieval Europe. Now, the way the program actually worked with Yahweh, and he explains it actually in the Torah, is that, you know, when you when you know that the debts are going to be forgiven, let's say that's 5 years away, and you want to say, all right, so a person wants a loan to buy something, and the debt has to be forgiven in 5 years, what you end up doing is you write the term of that loan for the 5 years that are remaining. So that at the end of it, so at the celebration of the Yovel, nobody owes anything to anybody. If you are, you know, in the ancient world, slaves did most of the work. And if you had an indentured servant as part of your business at that time, and you know, keep in mind, we look at slavery in a very repugnant way now. But back at the time where people were just unbelievably savage, the being a slave means that you weren't killed. You were either killed or you were enslaved because of the marauding armies. And so the same thing would be true there. You know that you're only going to have that person working for you for 5 years or 10 years because of the approach, and therefore the price, the value that you pay out for it is therefore limited.
But would it work in these times, in this economy? I mean, there is no slaves, but if someone would come over to me with research, some medical research, I mean, as we see in the medicine industry or medical industry, there is some research can take more than 10 years, more than 5 years,
right.
Long time. But if if there is only five years before, I mean, I'd never loan him, so we'll have to wait 5 years before I can loan him money, before he can discover that medicine that will cure people. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, yeah, what you would do is that if you're 50 years from a Yovel, then you could have a 50-year note. If you're 20 years from the Yovel, you'd have a 20-year note. You know, 10-year, 20-year, even 5-year notes. Typically, business loans are almost always short terms. Very seldom do you see a business loan that is anywhere near the term of a home loan. You know, home loans, 25-year amortized mortgages. And you could have 25-year and even 50-year amortized mortgages, depending on the time that you offered them. But most business loans have a term of anywhere from 1 to 3 to 5 years anyway. So this really wouldn't create a restriction on that. And most businesses, particularly large multinational businesses, particularly those in the drug industry.
Again, you're talking about most businesses, but you can control on when someone's head gonna strike a really good idea and they would come up with that perfect solution to whichever problem.
But here's the problem, though, is that if a multinational in the drug business, for example, decides that they're going to fund their research and development of a drug, which is typically between $1 billion and $1.5 billion, because of the FDA approvals and all the liability issues. That if you're going to do that, if a drug company were to do that with borrowed money, they wouldn't be in business very long because most of the drugs that they invest in don't prevail. And so what people do on these kinds of large risks in businesses is they always make those investments with equity, and it doesn't affect equity at all. So you should really never be in a position where you're borrowing the money for a long-term high-risk solution. You need to do that with equity. And even startups, for example, I've started many businesses. And when you start up a business, you don't start up the business with borrowed money. You start up the business with equity. And the riskiest projects are based upon equity, not on debt. And equity is not affected in this plan. So that's the best answer I can give you. Nick, I'm sure we'll be talking more about the Yovel. In fact, I have a whole chapter on Yah's presentation of the Yovel. And we'll discuss it at greater length. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I rather like the detour that Nick took us on. It was a wonderful question that Nick asked. Let me explain some things here regarding the Yovel, which may be helpful. The purpose of the Yovel is to teach us something. Every detail in the Torah is in the Torah primarily to teach us something important from a spiritual perspective about Yahweh, about his covenant family, about the Torah itself, and about our redemption, our salvation. And so the purpose of the Yovel, which means Yah's lamb is God. Of course, the Maaseiah Yahusha was the sacrificial lamb of God on Passover in 33 CE. That everything that is important relative to our redemption occurs not just on Yovel years, but in increments of 40 Yovel years. A covenant was conceived and ratified from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden. It was exactly 40 Yovel to the time that the covenant was ratified and affirmed between Yahweh and Abraham on Mount Moriah. It was exactly 40 Yovel from the time that that covenant was ratified and that Yahusha enabled its promises in 33 CE. It will be exactly 40 Yovel to year 6000 Yah, when he is going to return to the very same place. What's 2000 plus 33? 2033. That is year 6000 Yah. He is coming back at a time that embodies the promise of the Yovel. All debts are forgiven. All people who survive his return are free. And we can come to the land because it has been returned to Yahweh. That is the promise that is being conveyed here. Now, in terms of just the economic machinations of such a plan, here's the way that it works and the reason that it works. If you know that the Yovel years are well known, 33 CE, a Yovel year. 2033 is a Yovel year. The Yovel years are very well known. And so if you're in the business of borrowing, you're in the business of lending, then you know the term that you're going to put on a loan. You're not going to have a loan. For example, if you were to have a loan in 30 CE with the Yovel being 33, the term of that loan is going to be 3 years. I'll loan you X amount of money. I'll loan you the amount of money that you're comfortable that you can pay back in 3 years. If you're 50 years from the, so it's 33 CE, you could, but no one would, write a 50-year loan. People typically don't do things beyond a generation, and 25 years is a pretty rough estimate of a generation. So the Yovels are typically two generations long, which is about the amount of time that people become stratified into the super wealthy and the impoverished. And so by doing this every 50 years, you prevent that stratification of just growing crazy. You know, and the land is such an incredible part of this too. You know, if you look at the robber barons, the folks that were the merchants that became fabulously wealthy in this country. And if you ever go to Rhode Island and you see the gaudy homes of these the first billionaires, they became wealthy because of eminent domain and, many cases, railroads and rights they were given either as bankers by the government or land that they were given that became stunningly valuable in their administration of railroads. And so if land isn't redistributed every 50 years, what you have is the case of these extraordinarily evil, manipulative people having control over the lives of far too many people. But, of course, this plan does not touch equity. That which you earn, God does not steal. He is not like the European Central Bank. He is not like the International Monetary Fund. You don't have to, he's not going to confiscate anything that you've earned. And so it is an extraordinarily fair plan, an extraordinarily smart way to allow free enterprise, to have people be able to earn and compete and to work and to seek reward for their work without ever allowing society to become overly stratified. So extraordinarily good thing. It even has a welfare, if you will, mechanism in it. And the welfare mechanism is based typically on about 10% of the fields. So if you're in the business of raising sheep or growing a plant crop like barley, you'd leave 10% of your field to be worked and to be harvested by the poor. That way the poor is not getting something for nothing, which destroys their moral character. And that way also they're not going hungry. It is a marvelous solution. It's a free enterprise solution with a leveling mechanism that is marvelous. But his primary purpose, of course, is to teach us about God's nature, the purpose of the covenant, the purpose of the Torah, which is to free us, to remove all of our debts, and to bring us home to God's land. That's the message of these Yovel. So on the fifth day of moving on of the creative account, we learned that the first living nefesh souls were born of water, not of spirit, alerting us to the fact that our mortal souls must be immersed in God's spirit, Yah's breath of life, if you will, to live eternally. Five is the number of repulsion and chaos, so it should also not be surprising from a historical perspective that the souls created on this day were surrounded by mighty serpents. Serpent is a metaphor for satanic deceptions of the worst kind. Death and dying became counterparts to birth and living. That is why God reminds us twice in the fifth day that living souls produce after their kind. A society immersed in religious poison will breed dysfunction, and it will breed more demonic souls. Historically, the 1,000-year epic beginning 33 CE and ending in 133 was mankind's worst, just as this would imply. The world witnessed the rise and birth of Islam, with its flood of terror lasting to this day. During the Dark Ages, mankind was also plagued by the stifling religion of Christianity, which was conceived by Paul and promoted by Constantine. Not to be outdone, in the fifth millennia, it also gave rise to Rabbinic Judaism with the creation of the Babylonian Talmud. Written in 500 CE, man's oral law was steeped in counterfeits of mystery Babylon. It grew into Kabbalah, the mysticism of universal religion. And it didn't take long for this satanic invention to consume its creators. In the next millennia, Jewish mysticism would give rise to the Illuminati, to Freemasonry, to communism, to Nazism, to socialist secular humanism, to the New World Order, social democracy, universal jihad, all things that grew out of Kabbalah. Satan's best known symbol is his inverted pentagram. This is the mark that he has placed on Washington, D.C., connecting Washington's Masonic obelisk with the White House, Capitol, and Washington's Masonic Temple. You find this pentagram, replete with its throne room, which designates the sun as God. During this epoch, the fifth millennia of man, we find the horrible confusion associated with the Roman Catholic Church, based as it was upon Paul's repulsive letters, blended together with the whole the horror of Babylon via Constantine's devotion to Mithraism. 500 years later, the repulsive religion of Islam was born in Baghdad, the home of Babylon. Satan's religious scheme was founded by a demon-possessed sexual pervert and terrorist. Both corrupted the truth and made God's chosen people their enemy, both Paul and Muhammad. Both gave those they conquered a simple choice, convert or die. Submission was now the order of the day. So it was during this time that religions multiplied, Paul and Constantine's Christianity, Akiva's rabbinical Judaism, and Muhammad's Islam, plaguing the world and damning countless souls. While the fifth millennia opened beneficially with the promise of renewed life, it closed in darkness and despair. Scripturally, six is the number of man, and so it would be. The sixth millennia dawned, focused on the errant ways of humankind. As a result, this era will terminate even more horridly than it commenced. Years 1033 through 2033, and the next Yovel year, the only Yovel year within the generation that witnessed Jews' return to Israel, is 2033. It began with the ugliness of the Catholic Crusades and their Inquisition. While the Reformation made Yahweh's word more available to the masses and reduced the influence of the Roman Catholic Church, Protestants brought in far too much baggage with them from Roman Catholicism. in mankind's final millennia, the religion of man, socialist secular humanism, became the national religion of Russia, of China, of most of Europe. Even in America, politics, the media, and academia became slaves to political correctness, which is man's replacement code and the foundation of socialist secular humanism. As a result, we stopped being judgmental. We stopped exercising good judgment. And with that, we ceased being civil, just, moral, and rational. Soon it will be all over. In the next 20 years, between 2013 and 2033, we will poison and scorch much of our planet, killing as many as 6 billion people during two horrible wars on our horizon. The era of man comes to close where all mankind will come within an hour of destroying the earth, completely eliminating choice and life. We're in for a rough ride. The road ahead is dark, serpentine, deeply pitted. And it is headed the wrong way, at least for the preponderance of people. Apart from God, we have learned that we are a conniving lot, devious, destructive, self-serving, vicious, and often cruel. Born of water and dust, most will return from whence we have come. Heedless of Yahweh's salvation story, the man of science is the sum of his existence. There is nothing more. But for those of you who choose to know Yahweh, who choose to value him, who join his covenant family, and who love him, the seventh day will be long and glorious. On it, God rested and reflected, and so shall we. Those who survive the tribulation will enter the millennial kingdom, 1,000 years of perfect peace. This is the story of the seventh day. It is the story of the Moed Mikre. It is the story of our salvation. It is the story of our creation. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Mysteries for today. We will continue, of course, with Yah's testimony and our review of it tomorrow at this time. There are three additional concepts that are presented in the opening of Bereshith, which means in the beginning, corrupted to Genesis, that cry out to be known. First, there was death and dying on earth during Adam's stay in Eden. We know this because Noah's Ark is covered in pitch, and Jerusalem, is dressed in limestone, both of which are conceived in death. Further, the word for food, akalah, used in the 29th verse of the creative testimony that Yah provides to us, which is often translated meat and the flesh of animals, was used to describe what Adam and Chawah consumed. And when Adam and Chawah sinned, Yahweh wrapped them in coats made of skins, which was indicative of the blood sacrificed by the Passover lamb in the ultimate victory over death that it would provide. The Garden of Eden was walled for a reason, and that was to keep the predators at bay. These things also tell us that Scripture later confirms, that our nephesh soul is mortal. Rest assured, as we progress through the Torah, we will thoroughly examine every one of these claims. Second, according to Yahweh and Bereshith 2:6, the earth was enveloped in a mist at this time, creating a greenhouse effect in which every portion of the planet was lush and productive. Shielded from the sun's most harmful radiation, animals lived longer and were healthier. This explains why we are finding mammoths in the Arctic with tropical fauna frozen in their mouths. Third, Adam and Chawa were not the first Homo sapiens. They were the first humans created in God's image. That is not to say that they were the first animals, or that is to say, I should say, that they were the first animals to receive a nesama, a conscience. On two occasions, Scripture tells us that the daughters of men roamed the earth outside of the garden, hunting and gathering. It was only with the gift of a conscience and language that man settled down and became civilized. And this occurred exactly when God said it would. 6,000 years ago. Yes, Yahweh gave Adam something that he did not give other animals. It's the one thing that caused us to be in his image. He called it a nesama. And Bereshit 2:7 we read, "And Yahweh, God, formed Adam of the dust of the earth, and he breathed into his nostrils the nesama of life, and Adam existed as a living soul." So here you have three Hebrew words all describing what happened. The first is that, like all animals, we were conceived of the elements of the earth itself. Second, that we have a conscience and consciousness. Our nefesh soul is consciousness. It is something we share with every other animal. All animals have the ability to observe their surroundings. Excuse me. And so what God gave humankind that was unique was a nesama, or a conscience, to be able to exercise good judgment. Sorry for the cough here. I had a hay fever. Before we tackle the meaning, however, of nesama, let's deal with what the word following it means. Is it? It could be haya or chaya, most likely chaya, speaking of life. There is some dispute, only because the difference in them is whether or not the left upright leg or the first letter touches the horizontal line of a cheth or stops just short of it and forms a hay. Haya, with the soft hay, is the root of Yahweh's name. It's the letter that's repeated twice in Yahweh's name. It means to exist. I was, I am, I will be. It is rendered with the Hebrew letters hey, yod, hey, which, by the way, reads the same right to left as it reads left to right. It creates a loop in that sense and therefore speaks of eternity. Chaya begins with the chess, or the hard H, and it is pronounced chaya. It means to live, to have life. And, of course, chaya, like haya, embodies Yah's name. Both conclude with Yah. So to remain alive, to sustain life, to live prosperously, to be restored to life, and to live forever, one has to use their nesama, ability to think, to exercise good judgment, in their use of their soul, their nefesh, their consciousness, to observe what God has presented to us, so that when we connect what He has presented that we can observe with our ability to process that through our nesama, nefesh to nesama, we end up with chaya, life restored and eternal. That is the message of this testimony. That is what makes us God's children.
You've heard about our MRE smorgasbord. Now, Long Life Food Depot introduces the most unique, safe, and longest lasting way to stash emergency food. The